Folks, welcome again to the Tabletop Treehouse, your Arbor of Adventure.
Arbor of Adventure. I'm Chris, by the way.
I'm Dennis.
It's funny because it's like Harbor, but it's a reference to our game. So we got some new doors today.
Yeah, a couple new ones on the wall here.
There's this shield with writing on it behind me.
Yeah, what language is that in? But honestly, I'll be honest, I'm a little more curious about the skull and crossbones. It's very enticing.
I feel like we're going to go back to Rapscallion where we're going to get really wet.
Folks, why don't we dive in and take a look, huh?
We'll be right back.
Well,
there was an octopus. It was a big octopus.
Could we call it a kraken? I mean, it was a kraken in my estimation. I don't know if it officially classifies, but my estimation, that was a kraken.
I mean, if you want to call it a kraken, you can.
I that's what I'm going to do. That's okay. What I'm going to tell people. I survived a kraken.
Okay, sure.
That's what I did.
It was wild. Plus, the party at Thunder Bluff was pretty neat, too.
Yeah, there were some very good times prior to the Kraken.
The Kraken.
That's what I'm claiming.
Sure. Was it like a Jack Sparrow Kraken?
It was an octopus.
Speaking of octopus, that's we're talking about Rapscallion today. We're going to tell a little bit of a story about our Rapscallion game.
Yes.
Which included an octopus fight.
Yeah.
At Thunder Bluff.
Yeah, right? That's
called Thunder Bluff? It's not called Thunder Bluff. It's called Thunder Spike.
Right. Thunder Spike. Well, it's on a bluff.
It is. Thunder Bluff is from World of Warcraft. That's why. We can't even remember the names of the cities in our games. I'm bad at this game.
Well, we play enough of them that, you know, there's a little crossover and bleed.
Yeah, there's some amount of bleed and crossover. Anyway, it's a pirate city that has lots of spikes that come out of the top of it to catch lightning. Lightning Plunge is the name of it. That's
Lightning
what it is.
Plunge.
Lightning Plunge took a second.
I was going to say Thunder. I was like, it is Thunder something, but no, I was totally
it was
off.
Lightning Plunge. I didn't name it. I actually not sure that I named it. I think one of you folks did.
Well, no, and that's one of the beauties of the game, to be fair, but that's we'll true. Get to that in just a minute.
So, Octopus Fight. They were in Lightning Plunge. The crew, they were at a bar, hanging out, carousing. The one that was on the bottom level.
Yes, yeah. We had been having a good time. You know, it was a bit of like a... I don't know if it was full on down... Well, no, I think it was during a downtime period.
It was during
period.
A downtime period.
Yeah.
The downtime period was just about to be over.
Yeah, we were, you know, kind of finishing up the narrative of that. And all of a sudden, you know, this bar that's kind of resting on the shore... Oh, like
It's over the water.
Yeah, it's got like piers jutting out.
Like metal grating where the water is.
And suddenly one of these grates bursts out and a tentacle shoots through and grabs Bossy by the leg.
He's
and,
an octopus tentacle.
Yes. Took Bossy into the... Drug her into the sea.
Bossy, who is the lover of the ocean.
Yes, our navigator on the ship.
Yep. And the ocean was mad at her. Or, well, it's more complicated than that, but...
Yeah,
grabbed her. It was the idea. The octopus was there as an emissary of the ocean, grabbed her.
Correct.
So then the crew, they hop on a boat. They start chasing her. I believe Barada like has a shoe gun in her shoe and shoots the octopus with the shoe gun and then gets pulled into the water.
Yeah.
Like jet skiing on the water. The octopus is like going through the water, holding Bossy.
I was I played Jeeves. I was running around looking for something to hop on. I think I found a jet ski.
You did. You twisted Fate, which is a move in the game.
Yes, that's right.
Find yourself a jet ski. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Next thing. Oh, Barada got shook off eventually by the octopus, but in doing so, Bossy got loose. Right. She used the breakout move to get loose. She was like, "I'm gonna try to get loose." And I'm like, "Cool, make a breakout roll." And she succeeded.
Yeah. And then I think
you grabbed Bossy, or not you, the boat, because the other people were on a boat.
Yes, yeah, I think it was the et al., our companionship there, grabbed her up, maybe.
No, there was just like a random speedboat.
Oh, wait, yeah, that's right.
Right, the crew just grabbed a random speedboat while you're on a jet ski. It was wild, right?
The rest of them, yeah. It was a wild scene.
So if I remember correctly, the boat grabbed Bossy, you on the jet ski grabbed Barada.
That's right. She grappled onto me.
Yep, which meant she was still water skiing
behind me.
Behind your jet ski. it was, once again, wild game right here, right?
Right.
Captain Crunch, who's eating a starfruit that gives him the throwing power. Like, he's got like the throw power if you want to go with the One Piece reference. And he can basically launch things from his arm like a cannon.
Yeah, his there's different types of damage. He does wreck.
Which is a lot. Like, normally you do harm.
Yeah.
He does wreck when he throws stuff with his arm.
Yeah. Building damage.
Yep. And,
or octopus damage.
Yep, and he hit that octopus with the stone, and... Yeah, the octopus got splattered.
Yeah. Well, and thankfully all of us had been, you know, not drowned at that point.
So that's Rapscallion, by the way.
But it was quite wet.
A lot of our games kind of go that way.
Yeah, they're a bit slapdash and, you know, not slapdash, but, you know, you're chasing your tail sometimes, I guess, is maybe what I'm getting at. It's a lot of contained chaos.
It is a lot of contained chaos. I mean, it is a Powered by the Apocalypse game. We'll give you a rundown of what PBTA is, but it is a Rapscallion is a PBTA pirate adventure game.
Yes.
That is its
And it
its
does
purpose.
Its job very well.
Yeah. And its goal is to create stories in the vein of Pirates of the Caribbean, One Piece, you mentioned, which I've never played, but Black Flag, Assassin's Creed Black Flag.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, as far as video games, one of the best pirate games ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just do it right. You can sing sea shanties and stuff. It's really good.
That's pretty fun.
But no, it captures that milieu, for lack of a better term, you know, that tone, that feeling of being a swashbuckler on the high seas.
Mm-hmm. And ours is not exactly what I would call the typical Rapscallion game.
Well, no, you wouldn't see us, you know, we wouldn't be one of the Disney rides.
No, we wouldn't. Although it's questionable whether the Pirates of the Caribbean movie should be Disney rides.
Well, yeah.
They are PG-13, so it's fine. Everything's fine. So let's do a PBTA primer real quick. PBTA, Powered by the Apocalypse. The system is named for the eponymous Apocalypse World game by Vincent and McGay Baker from way back in the day. It just got its second edition.
Yeah.
The game is surrounded by the concept of moves. In order to use a move, you have to trigger it by basically narrating in the fiction. For instance, which means the game is focused on the conversation. So the conversation between the players, I'm including the game master as one of the players, and we're just talking and talking and talking and narrating and asking questions and putting out information until a move is triggered.
Yeah, like very rarely should you be saying, like, I want to X, and it does come up, but more so it should just happen organically where you say, I'm, you know, looking around the room or I'm trying to figure out what this guy is doing, and the GM will say, all right, roll me a size up.
Yep. I think that's what it's called, right?
Yeah, that's one of them in... Yeah, that's one of the ones.
I don't have a move sheet in front of me for once. It's wild. I put down Clever Trick as the example.
Oh,
so
yes,
let's talk about Clever Trick. And like I said, these moves are pretty flexible and open. They're supposed to generalize in covering what you can do in a pirate game. And there's always a move that is like the most basic that you can fall back to if nothing else really fits. And in this game, it's pretty much use a Clever Trick. So
you can fit a lot of things into that box.
Yeah. Or modify it just slightly to fit most things that you can't fit in other spaces. So when you use a Clever Trick to seize the upper hand or avoid a sticky situation, so you will narrate until something like that occurs. When you do that, then you will roll plus vinegar, one of your four stats. On a 7 and 9, your trick works, but there's a catch. That's called a hit. The fates will tell you what it costs to follow through, so you can still succeed. The fates is the game master. Ooh, goblins. Or hobgoblins.
Man. They're out a lot more lately.
They are. I mean, it is nice outside. It's summertime.
That's true. I can't hire a shot.
Yeah, they don't want to harsh their buzz, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're doing their thing.
Maybe we can give them some Akibli snacks.
Yeah, they probably enjoy that.
Yeah.
They probably enjoy that. Get your pocket pantry.
Yes. Check out the pocket pantry.
So, like I said, the fates, who are the game master, will tell you what it costs to follow through, and then you can choose to or not. On a 10+, you pull it off spectacularly, so you just accomplish the thing. What you were trying to do, and you mark a luck. A luck is a resource in the game.
Which you can spend luck to twist fate, like I did to get the the jet ski.
You can also spend luck to give yourself a +1 before you roll the dice.
Yes, as well.
On a 6-, well, good luck. The GM gets to make a move, and it's probably not going to go very well for you. That's when the GM gets to do your stuff. The GM doesn't roll in Powered by the Apocalypse games. They just get to adjudicate these rolls.
Right.
And call for rolls, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. If a situation isn't mitigating, isn't bringing to the face, you know, that need for a role, then you just keep narrating until that situation occurs.
Yep. And the other good thing about rolling a 6-, which, why is there a good thing about rolling a 6-? It's you get an experience point.
Yes. Most of the Powered by the Apocalypse games, you earn experience through your failures.
Yes, you do.
Which
yes, you do.
Does kind of, you know, mirror life in a way.
Mm-hmm. Instead of character creation sections, there are playbooks. They're usually yeah. one or two pages. They cover everything that your character will need for the entirety of your character's adventuring career.
And you get quite a bit right at the start, to be fair.
You do. You
like,
do.
You're kind of a fleshed out character to begin with.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk a little bit about how that works. But in a future episode, when we talk about Rapscallion some more, we'll cover playbooks pretty in depth. We'll be doing these like every other episode for a little while until we're done talking about the game.
Yeah.
This game has no initiative, which
right.
seems weird to a lot of people, but it's just the flow. And that means it's on the game master for the most part to keep everybody involved and to kind of direct the camera. It's called spotlighting.
Precisely. We talked a little bit about that in one of our previous episodes.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of, you know, good ways to, plenty of things to help, you know, do that effectively. Mm-hmm. And the game provides you with some as well.
Yeah, it does. We will talk more about that also when we talk about game mastering this game in
right.
the future. Fictional positioning is a huge thing in this game. Fictional positioning is like, well, what's going on around you? What can you use in the scene?
Yes.
What have you built up to at that point?
Yeah. What, and, you know, maybe you could equate a little bit to like a tag-based system or something like that, but...
Without the tags.
Yeah, it's just you're building this narrative collectively at the table, and, you know, if you've already established there's a keg of gunpowder, well then, yeah, you could probably blow that up.
Yep, probably. Probably. If you didn't catch it during the use a clever trick thing, the way that moves are generally structured is you will roll 2d6 and add a modifier that goes from -1 to +3, sometimes +4. On a 10 plus, you get what you want most of the time, or you get a good result. On a 7 and 9, you get what you want with some sort of catch. And on a 6 minus, the game master gets to make a move, which could be giving you what you want at some pretty horrendous cost.
Yeah, it might end up being a bit of a, you know, oh, cool, you still succeed, but now X, Y, and Z is after you, or this,
yep.
you broke a leg, or
stuff like that.
Yeah. And those would, you know, that would usually line up with the game master giving you a trouble.
Yep. Yep. And that is one of the ways that you can, you don't die from troubles, but you can get a lot of complications that way.
Yeah. I believe there's only so many spaces for them. So once you fill up
it's full. I think you can actually get more than that. I have to go back and look at the rules. I'm not sure. I'll find out and we'll talk about it in a future episode. We're
talking
about characters. All right, Dennis, let me ask you a question. How does Rapscallion work to tell swashbuckling piratical adventure stories?
I mean, it does a lot of things really well. I think we kind of mentioned it already at the top. It just sets the tone for these sort of adventures. You know, taking notes from a lot of like popular media and things like that. But the playbooks themselves, they offer these questions,
mm-hmm.
and they really help drive, you know, that character creation sort of process.
Not only that, but some sort of piratical, tropey
yes.
character like storytelling
yeah.
beat
yeah.
for your character, for their background, for potential future stuff.
Right. Yeah. It gives you tie-ins with either your crew, the bigger world at large, your ship,
how you got to this point.
Yeah. The questions really help focus, you know, what sort of adventure you might be trying to have.
Mm-hmm. It tells the game master what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Tells the other players what you're looking for.
Right, right.
Here, let's delve into one. I actually have the Shiorgan. That's the doctor or alchemist here on the in our notes. So here, we'll just read their four questions. They get four questions. So one, you learn the trade. This is doctoring. And you get to pick one from a list then. It's in a proper college. And then it asks you, how'd you fall from grace? Or on the seas. And it asks you, who mentored you? Or because you happened to own knives, and then you get to answer the question, what's your previous job?
Because you happened to own knives. Yeah, I was a fishmonger. Now I'm a Shiorgan.
I mean, somebody had to doctor the captain when he got shot in the gut.
Oh, man. I don't think I ever read that last one. That's great.
Cool. So that's the first question. The second one is, your grand medical idea is to, and then pick one, cure all diseases, find the secret to immortality, create artificial life, something else, which I love that because it gives you an option if it's not on the list.
Right, yeah. Like sometimes you don't necessarily want to be pigeonholed, or, you know, you might not be feeling the flavor of what exactly is there. And, you know, there's going to be freedom to adjust those things, but it's nice that they just give you the straight up option, you know, fill in the blank.
Yep. And then it let you finish with what drove you to it. Like, why is that your driving desire?
Is it, you know, you said your family died and you're, you know, there's some disease, or is it, you know, you're power hungry? Or...
Yep. And that's cool because now you have a goal and a motivation.
Right. Yeah.
Something that's motivating you to achieve that goal.
Yeah.
Question three, what's your next step towards your ideals? Pick something rare that you need for your experiments. The Fates will tell you which faction currently has it, because there's factions on the seas, and why they'd never willingly part with it. So that gives you another hook, right?
Yeah, that's almost like handing the GM a MacGuffin.
Uh-huh, and that you get to create.
Right, exactly.
Which is fantastic, because now you get to be invested in the setting.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about that before, letting the players... comment to be like, this game is just doing it for you.
Yeah, it's the players are very involved with the world building, which is a very fun, it's a fun built-in mechanic.
I agree. And then the fourth question, the last question, who did you save from certain death? You get to tell who you save from certain death. It could be one of the other party members of the crew. The crew is considered the party members, but you could also pick an NPC that you save from certain death. And there's a reason for that in a second. We'll talk about bonds. And then it says, and who has one less, choose one, finger, eye, leg, because of you. Now, to put this into actual practice, I'm playing Pooter in the side story that Dennis is running for our game.
Yeah.
I normally game master the Rapscallion game. Dennis is now
Doing a little offshoot camp or adventure.
Yeah, which is part of their ship is called the Imperial. The Imperial's fleet has a ship called the Et-Al. We are playing members of the Et-Al that Dennis is game mastering for.
We sent him off on a little side mission, so we're like, why don't we zoom in on that and see how it goes?
And one of the other players is playing Grendel, the milk mad, a goat Shirogen, who's like a mad cheese alchemist.
Cheese alchemist. They have a homunculus. Oh, that thing is...
It's horrifying. But in answering this question, we decided that Pooter had lost his leg. We decided that the cheese and monoculus was built based on Pooter's leg.
Right, yeah, that was kind of its gestation point.
Its founding thing, so that's what we all decided on together.
It was a great table moment, and you know, it worked for me because I could just be like, all right, y'all are crazy, but I'm gonna roll with this.
I mean, that's what this game is. Game is pretty out there, right? We play Delta Green, we play our Streets of Avalon game. I think the Rapscallion game is probably the most ridiculous one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But with that, you get to take a bond with each of those people that you name.
Right.
And bonds are a mechanical thing that are important. We'll talk about it either in a future episode or later down in this one. I think probably in a future episode.
Yeah, maybe when we touch on character stuff more in detail.
We'll be back after a word from our fantasy ad sponsor, Keebly's Pocket Pantry.
Welcome, everybody, to Hobble's Black Market. Today, we have this right here.
Keebly's Pocket Pantry, a wonderful little item we'd love to show all of you at home today. Or, you know, maybe in your hovel. But we have this wonderful opportunity here. It's got some amazing, amazing properties, if I'm to believe what's been told, yes?
Yes. It has all kinds of food inside of it. It may look small, but it packs a mighty feast.
What do you call one of these things? It's kind of like a gourd or...
A cornucopia.
Cornucopia, that's right. I always see them at the table around the fall.
I suppose we should start demonstrating what's in here, then.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Anything come to mind?
Well, I know that there's some lemon boss, not lembus, because we are not infringing on copyright, but lemon boss. Let me just see if I can't get some there.
Some delicious lemon flavor, at least.
I gotta reach. I gotta reach. Oh, God, my shoulder.
Wow, that's Jesus. Very deep.
It's very deep. It's a problem. Rico is on top of me now. But look, lemon boss. And I think there's a whole loaf in there, in fact. You know what? Let me go back there and see if I can't find it. Oh,
yeah, because, you know, maybe a piece for each of us. Don't hurt yourself.
It's deep in there, but I found this whole loaf.
Holy
of lemon boss.
That's quite impressive.
Lemon boss.
Now, that can keep you going for quite a while on the road.
Quite a while on the road. I mean, you might get diabetes, but, you know.
Well, I mean, no, it's got everything a growing boy, girl, you know, goblin might need.
Gnome. Elf.
Elf.
Take your fantasy race. Minotaur.
Yeah. Anything. It'll get you where you need to go, the lemon boss.
I think there might be some cookies in there, too.
Oh, yeah. Keebly does always seem to have cookies.
Does seem to have cookies. You want to go in there and grab a cookie?
Do you think it's... No, it wouldn't be our cookies, right?
Our cookies?
I mean, we've always got the cookies. What? He wouldn't have stolen our cookies.
He might have stolen our cookies. You should check.
All right. How far?
I had to reach pretty far.
What is that? I don't know.
Oh, it's not, it sounds gross. Oh, the squishes man. Sound bad.
Oh, geez. Wait, hang on. No, that feels, I think that's a chocolate chip. Hey, all right. Success.
Hey, look, a cookie. It's not even eaten. How exciting.
And you know, that might be stolen from somebody else.
Yeah, it doesn't look like one of ours.
No, yeah.
All right. What else should I go in there and try to grab?
I do remember Keebly saying something about his mom would always bake him up roast cockatrice.
Well, let's see if I can't find a roast cockatrice. Let me just move that out of the way. Maybe some corn or something. Get off of me, whatever you are. That's not dead.
There's. Oh Lord. Well, look at that.
What the hell?
Oh no.
Keebly.
Oh man.
Keebly, you're not supposed to eat the product. What are you doing, Keebly?
We guarantee that any pocket pantry that you purchase for the home will not be, you know, pre-eaten. I think that's just a in-studio problem that we're dealing with right now. But folks, again, this wonderful opportunity can be yours for, you know, a very modicum of a price.
Only 37 gold pieces in 3 monthly installments.
3 easy installments. And, I mean, yeah, the months, those are a little more nebulous. But we'll deal with that. The paperwork will come to you in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I believe if there's anything else.
No, I mean, there is the, there's some warnings.
Oh, we should let the folks at home know. Yes, the Keebly's Pocket Pantry may attract hungry children.
Yep.
Kender.
Aren't they like children?
Well, half and half. Huh. This way, that way.
And the hungry one. Yes. Beware of the hungry one. He is a problem.
The hungry one will be aware when you open the pantry.
He looks kind of like a demonic cookie monster. It's really bad.
You know, that could be a new friend, perhaps. So, maybe. You know. Just please get your orders in now. Lines are open. Don't hesitate. And remember,
if you don't order here, you can always go to Zig Bob's Magical Emporium. You can buy them there.
That's right. Zig Bob's is our main supplier here.
And the most important thing is if you buy a Keebly Pocket Pantry, you will help keep Keebly weird.
Yeah. And we all want to keep Keebly weird, folks.
Mm-hmm. Keep Keebly weird. Yeah. I think some of the general moves really, really drive home this kind of like piratey thing. And that's what general moves should do. They should drive home the theme and ideas behind the game.
Yeah.
So there's a more than I'm going to name, but parlay, because Pirates of the Caribbean.
Parlay.
Parlay. It's in a lot of other games, Pirate by the Hawks games, but it's appropriate. It's so appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, you can't help but say it in a pirate accent almost.
I know, right? Hoodwink.
Hoodwink is great.
I mean, it's the Jack Sparrow move.
Yeah.
Where he just starts yapping at people until he gets what he wants.
Right.
I mean, that's essentially a hoodwink.
Yeah. Drops a hat on him and disappears. Yeah.
Yep. And it's when you try to trick somebody, you roll. And if you hit, they believe you. If you roll 7 and 9, you have to do something to convince them.
Right.
That they want a reason that they should believe you.
Yeah.
And then 6 minus, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Which you can see that in those Pirate of the Caribbean movies.
Yeah, there's plenty of times where, Jack Sparrow has failed.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, the story progresses from there.
Mm-hmm. Which is, that's the thing.
Right.
And then the last one I said we put in here was Stand Your Ground, which is interesting. And it works, I think, to evoke, especially that Pirate of the Caribbean or that, I mean, I've watched 900 and change episodes of One Piece. So there's a lot of that going on in there, too, where you, like, you have to stand your ground. I think we'll talk about this move a lot in the future because I don't think it's a super well put together move.
What I realized when we were playing the last time, it may not be specifically designed for this, but I see it almost as kind of like a willpower check.
It is a willpower check,
you know, and like I think it's a little bit bigger than that in the game itself, but like. Maybe bare bones, it's kind of just a willpower check.
Yeah, it always feels bad because it's basically, you can, as a player, you can push somebody else to stand their ground to try to get them to do something.
Right.
But as a game master, you can push somebody to stand their ground, and there's not really any potential benefit for the player in doing it. So it feels very much like a punishment move.
Yeah, and I think maybe the idea behind it in the game itself is like, the seas aren't your friend, you know?
Yeah.
And you're a pirate and, you know, life is against you, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So, and it's one of those moves to, part of that move, I think, is to kind of maybe push that idea.
It is. And also to like, because pirates are more willing to fall to their vices, and all pirates have vices.
Right. And yeah, each of the playbooks have their own specific kind of vice or desire.
That's one of the primary things that you're supposed to be pushing. The game is supposed to be pushing on the players, is like pushing them to like deal with their vices, and the stand your ground move comes up in that.
Yeah. And some of the vices are really, really cool. Like I play the Chronicler.
Yep, the Chronicler.
He loves books basically. So like if he gets really stressed, he like escapes into his books and, you know, kind of ignores the party and, you know, maybe ends up summoning a genie or a djinn if things go really, really bad.
Yep. Yep. The next thing is the ship playbook.
Oh, the ship playbook is great.
I mean, so, you have a ship.
Yeah. I mean, you can't be a pirate without a ship.
Uh-huh. And it has crew, and it has, the crew might mutiny on you or they might like you. Your crew has been very good to the larger crew.
Yes. Yes. We've taken care of them as much as we could. I mean, there was a point where I think we were kind of overcrowded, but then we got the second ship and we were able to mitigate that. I think we've given them bonuses.
You have.
Yeah.
Even though you make them do the NOS sometimes, which by the NOS is bust out the oars and row. Bust out the oars and row.
NOS. Yeah. NOS. NOS. But no, I think there's three different ship playbooks.
There are. Oh, there's more now, but there are three in the basic book.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. There's been a bit of expansion since then.
From the Kickstarter.
Right. And they all do a really good job, much like the individual character playbooks. They help you define what your future adventure is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you, I know we picked the Ramshackle,
which is like the rough and tumbled ship that just came to them out of the blue from somewhere.
Yeah. It's just kind of this big, like put together barge. It's very, you know,
kind of broken down. It's for the crew that wants to try to rise to fame.
Right. But there's other ones like the Legend, and that's maybe a bit more like the Black Pearl.
Yep.
Or
the Jewel's the other
the
one.
Jewel, or maybe, well, yeah, they made the, I,
no, I mean, the Jewel would just be a really pricey, very nice ship.
Oh, yeah, that's more like if you've stolen, like, a royal...
Like when
yeah.
they like when they steal the Excelsior or whatever it's called.
Right, right, right.
Because that's, like, that's the Jewel, the fastest ship in the fleet.
The Jewel of the Navy, yeah, yeah.
Fastest ship in the fleet. No one's catching that. Well, the Black Pearl's faster. But, yeah, that's what it's like.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, so each ship book is, you know, unique in that way that it... based on the questions that it then asks you
mm-hmm.
about how you got your ship, how you came to it, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Here, I got them down. We'll go through them because they're fun to go through. I think they're fun to go through.
Oh, anyway. Absolutely.
Each crew member may name an essential change or addition they made to this ship. If they do, they gain one bomb with it. So that means you get to just add stuff to the ship.
Yeah. Like, okay, well, yeah, it's got auto
hemp rope,
auto rigging.
You well, know, you guys put hemp rope
oh,
on
yeah, that's
the
right.
hemp rope garden.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember what else the initial... I think you put a library in there for the Chronicler.
I don't think there's a library on the ship, no.
No, I always forget, but it was so long ago. We played we started such a long time ago, and they've made additions to the ship with the Tinker move, which we'll talk about in the future.
I think part of our starting thing was an Apple IIe.
Yes, I put that in there.
Yeah, yeah.
That was me.
But I think that was maybe in place of one of the other ones. That was more of a homebrew at the moment. If it hasn't been said already, we're playing a little bit more post-apocalyptic pirate game.
It is post-apocalyptic pirates with a lot of weird.
Yeah, extra weird. Weird is one of the main.
Give me your water world plus your Pirates of Dark Water plus your.
Biker Mice from Mars, kind of.
Yeah, Biker Mice from Mars, Mad Maxian kind of stuff going on. It's pretty out there. There's a lot of... I love Pirates of Dark Water. This is me. I am, like, leaning...
Your little homage.
Yeah, I'm leaning into it a lot, too.
Yeah, and it's very fun. But yeah, so other questions that they have, who made the ship what it is now? So yeah, like, who was the original designer or that sort of thing?
Yeah, describe one secret thing they put into the ship that only the crew knows about.
I think that was maybe our computer.
I pitched it.
Yeah.
And you were all like, yes.
Yes, absolutely. This fits.
The crew could have chosen something else, but I pitched that because I'm like, it'll be fun. And they're like, yes, please. And then the third one was, your ship's name is Choose One. And it's the Going Merry, which is a One Piece reference through and through. Their first ship is the Going Merry. Charon's Ferry. I mean, we're...
Bit of a nod to the River Styx kind of thing, right?
Yeah. The Goose. Or something else.
I wonder if the goose is a reference just to like
I don't know.
Like, people are terrified of geese sometimes.
Probably.
If you've ever read the Goosenomicon, you know what I'm talking about.
The Goosenomicon. What a name. What a name.
But you can also choose your own, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Which you did. It's called the Imperial.
Yes.
For the Imperial pizza place that's not too far away from here.
Yeah, one of our local old-time favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then there's map creation.
Oh, the map.
I love map creation.
We should definitely show him a shot of the map at some point.
We probably should show him a shot of the map. We will take a picture of the map and I'll put it in right now. So you're seeing the map right now. It looks, it's not what it was when it started. We color it pretty much every session.
Yes. You can add to it kind of as you go.
You're
as
supposed
well.
To add to it as you go. Our map, which fills our whole table, is not the map that you're supposed to be using for the game.
We went a little bit bigger, yes.
Yeah, I just rolled out some paper. If you've listened to the show, you've heard me tell the story. But if it's your first time, thank you for being here. Absolutely. We just rolled a piece of paper out on the table, and everybody just kind of drew stuff on it after I drew a few things on it myself.
Yeah. And it's very... You know, everybody kind of gets an opportunity to add to it, essentially. After you go through the ship and the character creation, those questions themselves may add things to the map as well.
And then everybody gets to add one final thing after that.
Right, exactly.
So people have already put stuff on the map. People in our game, I just let people draw continents and name them.
Yeah.
So there was that.
Thmog.
On top of the Thmog. 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 I think I'm getting better. Yeah, Thmog.
It's a soft S at the front.
Thmog. It's so hard to say, actually. it's Mike. Mike did that to us.
Yeah, it's a unique verbal motion.
And then you have this map, which is actually a tangible artifact in the game.
Yeah, so it's somewhat meta in that sense. Uh-huh. Like, the map isn't truly accurate either. Like,
no.
It's the best representation you're getting, both... For the player and the character, like both directions.
What I tell you guys all the time is it's the map that's on your ship.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like this is what you've been able to cobble together from other maps you've copied and, you know.
Yep.
So, yeah, a coast may not look exactly like it does once you actually get there.
It's true.
In fact, for the little offshoot I'm doing, the location was actually, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 miles inland. And I was it's not an oil derrick.
Yeah, yeah. Right at the shore. I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, some of the water caved out the land, you know? Things happen.
Dennis was so nice. He was like, Chris, if I do anything that you think is like too out there, I'm like, don't worry, I'll tell you, but I'm sure it'll be fine. I'll just roll with it. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, we've been having fun.
And yet, the character playbooks, we talked a little bit about them before, but they do a really great job of enforcing the pirate theme of the game.
Yeah.
The Matlock, the Gunslinger, the Swashbuckler. The Swashbuckler is very, very pirate-coded.
Yeah, I'd say, like, certainly Jack Sparrow, but I think it also kind of fits
Will Turner?
Will Turner as well, really well.
Will could be the Matlock, too.
Yeah, yeah. That's a little bit more, like, maybe like, comparable to, like, a fighter or barbarian.
Yeah, that's why I said Will. Because right. Will's pretty fighty.
One of the other characters, what is it? The Mountebank.
The Mountbank.
The Mountbank. They're kind of, you know, demon connected, warlocky.
I mean, Jack gets a little bit of that. There's the Blackbeard part.
Yeah, where he's got the curse from the gold.
I mean, there's Davy Jones, same
right.
deal.
Yeah, right. I'd mentioned the Chronicler, which is this kind of like in the game itself, like words and books are sources of power, essentially.
Yeah. The implied setting is interesting.
Yeah.
So the implied setting is that there are these leviathans. And so if you've ever watched One Piece, the giant, giant beasts, kraken whales, type stuff. You know, yeah, that's out there. Crabs.
Yeah.
Whatever, turtles, things like that are out there. Anything that's gigantic.
Oh, the turtle
sized.
Is awesome.
We'll talk about the turtle at some point. Their blood is more stable in the game than other forms of ink.
Yeah, essentially the idea is normal ink fades very quickly, or it is not at all permanent.
Not at all permanent, but
Leviathan ink will last, you know, through the ages. Yeah, my character Jeeves is always on the hunt for it.
That is a very interesting conceit of the game, because it doesn't really exist. That is one of the few very novel things about it.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique approach to the setting, I would say.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But I think it fits very well.
And the game does imply that there are three forces. There is law, the weird, and
death.
Death is an actual thing.
Yeah,
freedom. Because
right.
The pirates represent freedom.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
And those three factions have
three ideals more so.
Right? Three ideals. They each have
factions under them.
Correct. Yeah, they're supposed to, like, if you're doing it the way that the book suggests, you have like a faction associated with each of those things.
That's right.
We don't do that. I just went whole hog and building like more of the world out because everybody made a map. I'm like, I'll just fill it.
I mean, I think they would all kind of slot into one of those three.
They do on purpose. So there's corrupt law. That's a thing. There, the freedom thing is your pirates doing illegal things on the sea for potentially altruistic reasons.
Right.
And of course there's ships that sail around, right? Like, and there's the weird. The weird exists. So like your undead pirates, your strange magic artifacts that exist out there that are not like your plus one swords, but something really potent and special.
Yeah.
Things like that is what we're getting at.
The ship combat is really cool.
The ship combat is pretty fun, right?
You know, it's not like overly in depth, but it allows you to do a lot essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some of the best stuff.
And you can go like, you can basically board the other ship and then you're going right from ship combat to like maybe, you know, real combat kind of thing, or at least negotiations.
And it flows because the moves are just moves, right?
Yeah.
We're just using moves. So when a move gets triggered, then you roll the move and go on with the narration, narrate some more, trigger a move, engage the move, resolve the move, keep narrating. Like, and it doesn't matter if you're in hand-to-hand combat or in ship combat.
One of the coolest ship things I remember, like, we were getting chased, or we were in a fight and we were running away, and because we're this, you know, kind of ramshackle, part of our ship move is scarper.
Yep, scarper.
And basically, if you can roll, maybe I think there's a roll involved, but basically if you get away, you actually end up somewhere maybe advantageous for your crew. If you roll high enough, I think that's what happens.
Yeah, or at least somewhere where you are needed.
Yes, right, yeah. So it was it's a cool little, like...
Because the ship takes you where you need to go.
Keep the story going, you know. Yeah, you're running away from this battle, but you find where you need to be.
Which is fun if you don't have an idea for, like... You don't necessarily need to prep a ton for this game. We have. I do. I'm always stretching things. But you don't need to prep a ton for this game to keep the game going, because the game will just help create hooks.
Yeah, every character has enough meat on it essentially for the GM to be like, oh, I'm gonna lean in on this aspect now.
Yeah, man, session zero basically gives you a campaign.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's at least our intro to Rapscallion.
Should we mention Renown real quick?
We can talk about it when we talk about the ship stuff.
That makes more sense.
We'll talk about that when we talk about the ship stuff. There's another teaser for you. More Renown.
Renown is cool.
I'm not sure what we'll talk about next when it comes to Rapscallion, but we'll be talking about something. There's a lot to say about this game.
Yeah.
A lot more to cover.
We've been playing it for a while now, and I've finally, you know, dug into the back end a little bit of it as I got into GMing, and it's really cool.
It is really cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it, right? Like, go get yourself a Keeley's Pocket Pantry.
Yes.
Find it on our Patreon.
It's delicious. Many different options for you in there. Do try the stew.
Do try the stew. Once again, thanks for being here. If you want to talk to us some more, check out our Discord. We have a Discord. The links will be in the doobly-doo below. There's my Matt Coville reference for y'all. We have a Patreon. You can join our Patreon, or you can just go there and get, like, if you want to get your podcast through Patreon, the podcast is always there. If you're not watching this on YouTube, just watch it on YouTube. I'd appreciate that.
Look at our beautiful color.
Our beautiful color. We're trying to get better at this whole video thing. I'm learning as I'm going. We always have PDFs of the magic items that we're making. So the Keeley's pocket.
The pocket pantry.
Yeah, pantry. Dennis has done some design work on it. I'll do some cleanup on it. And it'll be out there for you to put into your games if you want to.
Absolutely.
And it's got a bunch of random D20 rolls.
So I built it. I basically, it kind of is create food, but you then roll on a table to determine what food you get. And some of the foods have some effects.
Nice. If you'd like a Keebly's Pocket Pantry sticker, because I will draw the Pocket Pantry, it'll look like a cornucopia with probably Keebly colors. I haven't drawn it yet. I'll get to it.
Maybe a little Keebly face on the side.
Yeah, a little Keebly face on the side. You can get that from Redbubble. Therefore, you can just like put a sticker on a card and hand it to people, and they can have their magic item of Keebly's Pocket Pantry.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Right? Neat. Well, with that, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. Folks, we always appreciate you coming by to check out the treehouse. Be sure to check us out next time when we talk more about Rapscallion.
And have a safe trip down the ladder.